It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Militant Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine, 518-789-3440, militantvet.com. With us this morning, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner, chief vet at the Militant Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Good morning. How are you?
What's so good about it? I mean, it's actually...
It's warmer. It's going to be warmer. That's a good thing, melting the snow.
You're absolutely right. I have, between the time that I walked in, had to decat. They were playing with paper towels, so there was shredded confetti. And then someone just threw up, so yeah.
But they had warm. The paper towels out, ready to go.
That is... now I understand everything.
Okay.
Okay.
You needed my interpretation.
I am so grateful for that. And with that, we will move on to Drew and Ankrum because she needs your interpretation too. I've only ever had Boston Terriers, but last month I adopted Oliver, a little guy who looks like he might be part miniature dachshund, part something else that's small with floppy ears. He's fixed. They say he is 2 or 3 years old, about 16 pounds, with a long body and short legs. Anyway, there are tons of beautiful rail trails nearby, but I find I keep hesitating to take him on long walks because I don't have any sense of how far is too far. He had heartworm when the pound first picked him up, and the rescue organization had to treat it before he was put up for adoption. I don't want to fatigue him. How long can a little dog walk? And does the recovering from heartworm thing make him frail or less, well, hardy in any way?
The heartworm recovery, it depends on where he is in recovery. Excuse me. Presumably, he's been completely, I don't think they would have adopted him out, I would hope, unless he was completely treated. But for a month after the second treatment, they need to be kept quite quiet. So typically, if that were the case, he would have come with those instructions. And if he's beyond that month, then he certainly can exercise. So the scary part is when they're given the heartworm treatment, it kills the adult heartworms that are in the heart, and then the body breaks them down into various size parts. And so if, in fact, you break off a large piece of a heartworm, prior to its being dissolved, basically, by the body, then there's a possibility of having an embolism, of course, into the lungs. And so I'm assuming that period of time is passed. So it would be the first month after the second treatment. So if that's not clear, then checking with the rescue organization would be a great idea. Typically, their dogs are also on medication for that period of time. So I'm assuming he's beyond that. And if he's been doing well and you've had him for a little while, he can definitely start to exercise again. And little dogs need as much exercise. They need exercise just like big dogs. They need to be moved. It's good psychologically for them and physically. So the dachshund was mentioned in this question. So I'm wondering, you know, sort of picturing him as having short, maybe...
Short little legs.
Little crooked legs, yeah. And in which case... You know, exercise, moderate exercise. So I wouldn't walk him probably more than a mile at this point, but you can get those general guidelines from your veterinarian after the yearly comprehensive examination. Your vet's going to be able to tell you how much exercise your dog should be getting. And I'm assuming you'll be doing a follow-up in any case because of the heartworm disease.
So quick question about the heartworm.
Yeah.
Is there new protocol for treating it?
Well,
new-ish.
New, so it was different 25 years ago than it is now. So I would say in the last,
8 years?
I'd say 5 years, but you know how that is. It could be 10.
Right, okay.
So we usually do it in a two-step process. First, they go on doxycycline for a month. I don't know whether they do this at the shelters, whether they do this down south when they have to move dogs through, but ideally doxycycline for a month, first treatment of one treatment, quiet for a month, and then two treatments on two consecutive days. So it's more of a gradual kill-off of the heartworms where dogs do better.
All right, and then is doxy still the I could be totally wrong, so you're going to have to save me here. Is Doxy still the antibiotic that doesn't bind dairy? Or doesn't it matter in dogs?
Doxycycline doesn't absorb well if you're eating dairy with it. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to be a big issue with dogs. So if, in fact, you have to give it in a little tiny piece of cheese because your dog won't eat anything else, it doesn't seem to affect it.
Okay.
Most dogs aren't living on dairy foods. So it really hasn't been an issue.
Okay.
But the doxycycline is to kill a little parasite that lives on the heartworm, and so it's easier to kill the heartworms. It's really interesting, newish stuff.
It sounds pretty cool, actually,
mm-hmm.
and a little more sensible. All right, so long, short, back to Drew for a second. The recovering from heartworm thing doesn't necessarily make him less frail as long as he's recovered, and that's something that Oliver's vet could tell him, yes?
Right, but I would think in general, if it weren't for the heartworm part of it, then walking a mile with a small 16-pound dog shouldn't be an issue. If his legs are in pretty good shape, then certainly you can work up to farther than that.
Okay.
You know, I've seen little dogs walk up to 3 miles easily with their people.
Yep. All right, so we're staying on the little dog theme. This is Kate in Milford. How can I tell when my Chihuahua Jack Russell mix is shivering because she's cold? Sometimes she shivers when she's excited. So how can I tell the difference?
So if she were cold, you know, I guess if you've had her for a long time and this is something new, that she is just standing there shivering in the house, I guess I would need a little bit more information than this. Not sure how to say it. So it depends on whether it's in the house, out of the house. If she's, you know, she may be shivering because she is nervous. We see nervous and excited, okay? If there's nothing around that you think is making her nervous or excited, and she's not acting anxious otherwise, then likely she is cold. Covering her up, you know, these little Chihuahua mixes can get colder more easily. People usually put jackets on them, put little coats on them. If she's already warmed up and she's still shivering, you know, if you're covering her with a little fleece blanket and she's still shivering, then likely it is some sort of nervousness about something, and there can be lots of things to that. So I don't think I can give an easy answer to that.
Okay. And, of course, it would be helpful if it were cold outside.
Right, and is she outside?
Right.
Or is she inside, and how cold it is it inside, and are you cold? And so those kinds of things. If lots of dogs, even when they're not cold, will shiver because they'll tremble when they're nervous. I see it at the vet's office. And other than that, I think it's a matter of warming her up and see if it stops.
I think that's really clever. All right. Lorenzo in Dover Plains, I saw a skunk walking across my lawn in the middle of the day. Does that mean it's rabid? I have dogs and kids, so I'm worried.
So I'm not really the skunk lady. I'm not really supposed to be giving advice on wildlife, but my understanding is that skunks are mostly nocturnal, but you can see them out and about during the day. It depends on how tempting the food source is. So if there's something going on that they're going to get to because it's food, and they have maybe if they have babies and they're trying to feed their babies, then you will see them out during the day. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're rabid.
It's not instant. And also, there are places during the day where it's very shady and not terribly sunny. So, so sometimes they are, even though I'm not the wildlife lady either. Sometimes they are out and about.
I do see them, and most of the time it's toward the evening.
Right.
Out in the bright sun, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're rabid. But if you see one more than one time in your yard, number one, your dogs are going to get sprayed. So if you're seeing this skunk hanging around because it might be living under the porch, then, calling the DEP might be a good idea.
And I will just never forget when Diesel Goodman had a friend. He had a friend. The friend was a skunk. The two of them would go marching off together, both with their tails held high.
Oh, it's a good thing that Diesel never got sprayed by that friend.
Oh, he did. And Shark, and that's when I learned that tomato juice is not the end-all and be-all. Although it can help. Mostly what it's good for is split ends. Anyhow, the Greeleys in Hartford. Yesterday, we took our kids to a petting zoo. We didn't notice until it was too late that the bunnies our six-year-old daughter was petting did not look right. Some of them looked almost like they had dandruff, and one of them had bald patches. Yuck. We got everybody's hands washed pronto, but me and my husband still have the heebie-jeebies. Do we have any reason to be concerned?
Definitely, I would let the petting zoo know, because they may not be aware of it somehow. those kinds of things, rabbits can have lice. They can have Kylatiella, which is called walking dandruff. They can have skin diseases that will cause hair loss. However, most of those things are fairly self-limiting in people. So if you get walking dandruff mites on you, then my understanding is you're not going to necessarily live on people.
You can wash
them off.
Hot soapy water here.
Yes, I think that having everybody wash really well is a good idea. But the important thing would be to let someone at the petting zoo know so that they remove those animals. It's very stressful being at a petting zoo, I can imagine.
Oh, God, I can see that. And
so if you're going to come down with something and spread it to other animals, that would be the time then that would happen. And so those animals need to be removed right away and taken care of.
Right, and people need to understand that removing them doesn't mean terminating their lives. It just means getting them out of a stressful situation.
Yeah.
There's a phenomenal sense. I'm noticing just a phenomenal level of sensitivity that doesn't necessarily, it's impractical. I think the latest thing I'm trying to recover from is the young lady in Arizona who thought it would be a good idea to take a selfie with a jaguar.
Oh,
And got scratched.
Now
there's a shock.
Well, it's manifestation of our detachment from nature. You know. I can't even imagine how you would not know
that that's a bad idea.
That just by looking at the animal, at the cat, that it was going to
react
that way. Of course.
Somebody may need to have a heart for me and just put me someplace safe. All right.
It'd be interesting, though, to be able to assess the stress levels in those animals just even by watching people or having to look at people behind that barrier. They have to do that all day. Oftentimes they have a place to hide, but it is amazing what we know now about stress and fear and anxiety in animals that just come to the veterinary office. You know, there's a whole new line of thinking and a whole new way to train our people and to understand about fear and anxiety when dogs and cats come in and to try to avoid that and treat it. And yet we have these zoos that, you know, these animals are living there for years. And I can't even imagine that they don't have, maybe at, I guess at nighttime, maybe their stress levels go down.
Yeah, and I think that, I think that there have been huge strides in taking care of these animals that are so different from when we were growing up.
Yes, I'm not sure that it's enough.
At this juncture, it's never enough.
Yeah.
In my view, but all I'm saying is, you're trying to balance the, oh, I'll just go down here and take a picture of the nice black cat. Oh, my arm hurts. And trying to balance that with, let's not stress the nice black cat out anyway.
Yeah.
I don't know. Dave in Albany, I got a nasty scratch on my wrist trying to rescue a stray kitten out from under my porch this morning. Is cat scratch fever really a thing? Not just a song. I put some Neosporin on it, but is that enough?
Cat scratch fever is a thing. It is caused by Bartonella, which is a bacterium. It definitely can affect some people, but you can imagine how many people are scratched by kittens. People are scratched by kittens all the time. So cats can carry it and not be ill with it and can transmit it to people. And people can get quite sick, is my understanding, depending on your immune status. And so someone who's immunocompromised would have to be careful. And I'm not sure that the cat can be fully tested. I think that definitely Bartonella levels would be recommended. There's so much that's not known about that disease. But in any case, scrubbing out scratches and putting on an antibacterial ointment, I think, is a great idea. But I would definitely, if you don't have a great immune system, talk to your doctor about it. And this was, my understanding is this is a stray kitten, so you don't know anything about it. So, you know, it might not be a bad idea to talk to your doctor about it. I can't really give advice on that, but cat scratch fever is a disease. You don't see people, you don't hear about people with it all the time, so I can't imagine that it is that contagious, but I don't know the specifics.
All right, and then the one thing I want to talk about for one second is let's just pretend that you've got a really, that you called your doctor and you've got a decent immune system and. What I have noticed is I don't know when this started either, people just start slapping the Neosporin on without cleaning. And so I would
things get deep down into the skin, and so you need to scrub the heck out of it.
Right, and that do you use hydrogen peroxide? What do you recommend for?
Well, an antibacterial cleanser first, like a
betadine
soap would be appropriate, I think, for any kind of scratches like that. Okay. And then at my office, anyway, we use that or a chlorhexidine soap. And we use a scrub brush.
Right. No. And I understand. That's right up there with the possibly you don't want to go take a picture with a nice jaguar. The two bits. I mean, maybe I watched too many first aid shows when I was way, way, way back in the day or something. But it always seemed like that step. And I've gone through life just baffled that you think you can just spray it and you're good.
Well, it hurts, so
I understand it.
I can understand not wanting to scrub the heck out of it. But definitely we do that with cat bites, you know. It's
right.
So important.
All right. Jonathan in Kent. My 4-year-old hound mix Hercules is a twig fiend. I mean, nothing will stop him from chowing down on little twigs, and I can't say the effect it has on the other end is that great. It seems like a bad thing, but maybe I'm just being uptight.
Okay, so there's, I'm assuming maybe there's diarrhea, or...
I probably worried more about a blockage.
Okay.
But so, I don't know. I don't know. I've seen some really wonderful examples of stick poop in my yard, so...
Mm-hmm.
But I also know that... I will never forget your daughter. I think it was when Ruffy and the Spaniel... The then not blind spaniel, she was chewing on a stick, and your daughter said, puppy's first bowel obstruction. So, let's
that girl.
Take that away. Right. So
those little tiny twigs, you know, if they're chewing them well, I would think would be a source of roughage.
Right.
But you know, chewing sticks, chewing a lot of sticks, being obsessive about anything and consuming it is a bad idea, right? So I think that number one is, you know, Hercules, I would definitely watch that. So if he's having trouble passing stool because there's so much bark and twig in there, then you have a problem. And it's likely a behavior problem if he's well otherwise. And so we need to find a way to work around that. And depending on where you, when he's not supervised, he needs to be in a yard that doesn't have a ton of fallen limbs, either a fence or an invisible fence, and you know, so that it can't, so it's not going to be a daily occurrence. So if it happens once in a while and he has to work it out, so to speak, then that's okay. But on a daily basis, if he seems obsessed about it, then number one, it's possible that he is ingesting something that he shouldn't eat because he has a stomach problem. So that ought to be talked about first. And if that's not the case, it can be, you know, kind of in his head, and he maybe needs something else to obsess about, which might be a ball, maybe some other kind of toy when he's out in the yard. So those are the things I would think about. Keeping him away from the branches that have a lot of twigs on them, and trying to get him interested in something else that he can chew without ingesting it. Of course, we wouldn't want him to chew up toys and swallow those, because they are an obstruction waiting to happen.
Right. And, but as you say, it is a behavioral issue. And so that's something that you would want to get in touch with a trainer or something about?
Yeah. I mean, potentially, you know, if you're... Can you really train a dog? It depends on what his lifestyle is. So if you're out in the woods and walking him off a leash, you know, what are you going to do about that? If you're doing a rapid enough hike, maybe he's just going to carry the branches around and not stop and eat them, which is fine. So you have to think about all those things. You don't want to be correcting him constantly. If his lifestyle is that mostly he's in the yard, you know, then really trying to avoid the situation unless he's going to the bushes and chewing off twigs, in which case, yes, getting a trainer involved would be a great thing, coming to your house and seeing what the situation is.
Right, and possibly adjusting. I did have, I think one of the sharks was just the world's best branch manager.
Yeah.
How did you carry that back?
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's just...
But it's an interesting question because we there are so many of those issues that are really hard to deal with. I think it's a great question that come up, and you wouldn't think that dogs would obsess about things. And in part, you know, maybe it's our culture and our environment, but, you know, we always have to think, are they getting enough exercise for whatever they might be doing as a breed? And so they're obsessing about something else. You know, is there something you can teach them to do which might take away some of that obsession with
energy,
twigs?
Like hunt.
You know, and I could be completely wrong. This may be a dog who's doing agility and everything else, but
this is a hound, so you're probably not completely wrong. It's just you know that's the little trick thing in there that might be worth seeing if he's getting.
Trying to get inside of their heads, and trying to help them with whatever it is that's frustrating.
Hound head. All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Cannon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.